You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Football Fanalytics podcast in association with 23. This is the show that explores the ever-growing world of football analytics and takes on the many tactical and topical discussions within the game. It's episode 57 and we're talking all things passing this week. My name is Mark Carey and joining me as ever is Ryan Bailey, and we are recording from Ryan Bailey's house for the first time.
For the first time. And actually, it's the first time, actually the last time we recorded in the same room. You then went on to do your leg about 2 hours later after we did that.
That's
so let's hope that there are no leg-based disasters after this recording session. But yeah, we are in my house, which...
And a lovely house it is, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't exactly call it a podcast studio, but you know, we're making steps up, Mark, aren't we? It's very nice to have you in the same room. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, Ryan. It's episode 57, and it made me think, 57, if I'm not mistaken, your favourite number.
It is my favourite number, actually. I didn't even think of it, yeah.
Yeah.
I am, to those who, probably most of you who don't follow me on Twitter, I am Ryan Bailey 57. So there's a plug, at Ryan Bailey 57, go.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, 57 is my favourite number. It was actually my uncle's motorbike number, who used to do motocross racing. And it was my granddad's favourite number. So yeah, it's always been 57. There's not really much else to it, to be honest. I do, whenever I used to create a player on FIFA, I always used to make myself number 57.
Did you,
on the back of my shirt. I then also used to boost all my stats up to 99, so I was the best player on the game.
Of course.
And 57 then obviously became a worldwide renowned number. A little bit, you know, sort of Beckham, Ronaldo 7-esque.
Yeah, of course.
57 thing. But yeah, you don't get many 57s, do you, on football shirts?
So. No, and I was going to say, you don't want your rating to be 57 either.
No, if I'd have set every stat to that, that would have been
a bit rubbish.
Really bad. But there you go. There's an insight into my life. Go follow me.
It just made me think, episode 57, we've got to talk about it, Ryan. And we've got to talk about the things that have changed since we last recorded.
Yes.
The big one being the confirmation of Erik Ten Hag to Manchester United, confirmed in the last few days. I guess your initial response to that, Ryan, do you think it's gonna work? I mean, for me, it's not even really about whoever comes in. It's about the bigger structure of Manchester United. That's the narrative is definitely true. From top to bottom, things need to change. It's not just about the coach.
Well, first of all, I mean, they took their time over announcing it, and it did feel a little bit like they were saving some iota of positive news to try and deflect from the absolute travesty of what's going on there. At the time of recording, Arsenal and Man United is about to kick off in half an hour. So everything I say right now might be updated. But they announced the Ten Hag news after the 4-0 thrashing of yours truly, best team, didn't they? And I remember just watching that game and just thinking, this isn't utter shambles, isn't it? They looked like they could be a mid-championship team, devoid of any sort of confidence and ability and everything. It was utterly disgraceful. And I don't even care too much, to be honest. You know me, I'm a guilty Man United fan as opposed to a diehard. But yeah, it was terrible. But then I was watching on Twitter, I saw some of Ragnit's comments sort of post that game. And it feels like, since the Ten Hag news, he's sort of like leveled up his... You feel like he's on the edge all the time, don't you? Of just completely going, do you know what? This place is an utter shambles. Mm-hmm. Like, he kind of keeps dropping in hints, doesn't he, of what needs to change, the culture, the people, et cetera, et cetera. And you feel like he's one result from just going, do you know what? I don't need this. This is an absolute mess. These people don't know what they're doing, and here's why, and here are the people. Yeah, that's how I feel.
No, I agree. And I think they're almost dragging... Manchester United dragging down his reputation a little bit, because he came in as this person who just thinks differently. He was the godfather of the gegenpress and thinking about high intensity and all that, and being influential over Jurgen Klopp, Thomas Tuchel and others. And it shows that the common denominator is the club. Like, a lot of different managers have tried recently to rejuvenate Manchester United, a sleeping giant, all things like that. And no one has been successful, which suggests that it's a bad barrel. It's not just that you got some bad managers.
It's a very bad barrel at that as well. It'll be interesting to see, I think, what they do. It'd be interesting to see how they handle his, inverted commas, consultancy role after he's finished. Because obviously, as a coach and stuff, it's been quite underwhelming and he feels a bit like a supply teacher.
He does.
But actually, the stuff he's saying about what needs to change and everything... very much echoes what, you know, your Gary Nevilles and all the top pundits and everyone, and what everyone thinks, really, everyone who knows what they're talking about. And he seems like he would have a plan and the know-how to make it happen. So it'd be interesting to see whether the reputation and the original plan of having him then try and reset the culture and all that. I feel like everyone says the word culture so many times at the moment. But it'd be interesting to see if the fact that he's had a bit of a failed interim stint will have any effect on how seriously they take him afterwards, which you kind of think would be a bit of a shame if they didn't, really, because he's not there to be the manager to turn it round, is he? That's Mr. Ten Hag's job.
Yeah, and I think his strength is doing the stuff more so in the boardroom. Yeah. It feels like, I know why he's mainly come in, obviously, to see what the dressing room's like, almost look on the ground what the issues are and then go upstairs and maybe help from a consultancy perspective. But his strength is more so that he's proven that in the past few years, rather than necessarily being the manager. He hasn't managed all that much in the past 10 years, actually, on the sidelines. He's been more of one to kind of build the club from the boardroom or from upstairs. I don't know whether he actually will fulfill it now. I don't know what the situation is, obviously, but I don't know whether he actually will just be kind of like you say, like, do you know what? Like,
need this.
Yeah, I don't need this. And if you've got a manager who's coming in, who I believe that Erik ten Hag does like to have a lot of control over everything, which makes a lot of sense, whether or not he might just be like, do you know what? I've done everything I can do. Actually, that whole consultancy thing, you know, I'll shake hands now and just leave. I don't know. But yeah, anyway, the new news is that Erik ten Hag is confirmed as the new manager of Manchester United starting in the summer. That's probably the overriding big news that that's happened since we last recorded. But I think without further ado, let's get back into what we do best and speak about a new topic.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay, so in this episode, we're going to talk about a specific type of passing, I suppose. So if I said to you, Ryan, what comes to mind when I say packing, what would you say?
In terms of football, I'm not too sure. In terms of packing, that's something I'm absolutely sick of, having just moved house, and then unpacking. I don't know if that's part of what we're going to talk about. But yeah, so I mean, I don't really know an awful lot about it. I mean, the fact you've said it's something about passing appeals to me straight away. I really enjoy it when we talk about different types of passing and different ways of measuring passing values and all that sort of stuff. So I'm interested to see what other ways that we haven't discussed in the past there could be to sort of usefully measure a different type of it. So yeah. Please do enlighten me.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually, because we've spoken about passing. Obviously, we can't get into episode 57 without talking about passing. But I think it was episode 6, the simple pass, that we spoke about type of passing back in the early days. For the new listeners who haven't listened back to our early stuff, episode 6, the simple pass, is well worth your time. And we'll probably come back to that very shortly as to why that's relevant. But yeah, packing. So essentially, it's similar to what we've spoken about previously. If I think, or if I said to you that a player has 100% pass completion,
yes,
what would you think about that player?
Well, I think before the Football Fanalytics podcast days, the initial thought would have been, oh, they must be really good at passing. But actually, you know, with the whole context is key mantra that we live by, mm-hmm. Very rarely, if you're making high risk passes or sort of needle through the, that's not how you say it.
Threading the needle.
Yeah. Let's ignore that. If you thread the needle sort of passes, you know, that are sort of going to put a striker through or whatever you're trying to do, then you're very rarely going to have 100% possession. Pass completion. I think that obviously that I would now think if you've got 100% pass completion rate, you're playing safe sideways passes, low risk, probably low reward, is what I would think.
Yeah. The reward is what we'll come on to, which we've spoken about before in terms of that possession value. I've given it away. That was episode 6, wasn't it? The possession value, which I do think we'll come back to in greater depth. But yeah, I mean, we've spoken about it before. The likes of Bruno Fernandes, Trent Alexander-Arnold, they come to mind straight away as players who don't necessarily have a high pass completion rate, but the value of those passes that they make are far more lucrative than maybe passing it back to your goalkeeper, back to your centre-back and things like that. And packing basically has that same sort of vibe to it. So it goes beyond simply pass completion. It looks at that passing in further context. And what it does is essentially measure each time a forward pass or dribble. So it's not necessarily actually just passing. It's obviously possession based. But a forward pass or dribble is completed and counting up how many opponents have actually been taken out or bypassed in the process of that action. Let's call it an action if you're talking about a pass or dribble. So we're thinking about things like those threading the needle passes, those line-breaking passes. How many players do you take out of the game in a single pass? And that's what packing, in short, essentially is.
And that's a common football cliche sort of phrase, isn't it? You've taken 6 players out of the game there or something, which actually, even though it sounds really simple, is not necessarily something that's explained, is it? I mean, so are you saying then, are we talking about progressiveness in terms of distance up the pitch? So if the ball from, say I'm looking at the pitch from a side angle, from the touchline, and then a defender passes to a midfielder through the 2 strikers, forward, literally forward, so it's gone beyond the distance of the 2 strikers, is that what it means? I would have then taken out 2 players with that pass.
Yeah, exactly right. And that would be essentially a line-breaking pass, wouldn't it? Because it's between those 2 players. I think packing would also constitute passing it almost around.
Okay.
So let me give an example. As you say, the centre-back has the ball. They pass to the midfielder through those 2 centre-forwards, as you say.
Yeah.
They've taken out... So their packing score at that point is 2. They've taken out 2 players. But they've also done a line-breaking pass between those 2 players. If that centre-back plays it to the right-back with maybe a bit of spin on it that puts it forward, still advancing the ball beyond those 2 centre-forwards, he or she is still packed 2. They still have a packing score of 2.
I understand.
If that makes sense. So they've just taken out those 2 players, and then when the X player receives the ball, they now have 2 fewer people to go past.
So we're assigning value, are we, to each pass, or is it like almost like an accumulative, say we've done a move, imagine a Arsenal in their prime sort of move where we've passed our way through a whole team accumulating in a goal, would we then accumulate how many players we've packed along the way, if you see what I'm saying? Like, and by the end of that move we might have packed, I don't know, all 11 players or you know, that kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, I don't know the absolute full ins and outs of it. I think one thing that would be useful almost as well is not necessarily to look at how many players, if you're talking about maybe a centre-back or a midfielder, how many players they've packed in that 90 minutes. Let's say they've packed 80 players. If you know what I mean, if you add up each time that you've made a pass. To me, that also lacks context as well, because that midfielder might have had the ball the most. So if you packed 80 players and you've had the ball the most, then you're going to you're going to increase the likelihood that you're going to play the ball beyond people. So it's almost, for me, where we've done obviously per 90 or per 100 touches or whatever, how many players do you pack, if we're going to use that phrase, per pass or per 100 passes? Because then that shows an inclination to play a line-breaking pass or to play it forward, rather than just, well, they're going to have a higher score because they have the ball more.
I see. Okay.
Do you know what I mean? I always think this about general metrics where it's like, a centre-back's successful tackles. And it's like, okay, well, how many tackles did they attempt?
Yeah.
Because you're going to have more successful tackles if you make more tackles.
And if I got brought on in the 90th minute and made one tackle and it was successful, that'd be like 100% success.
Yeah. You need that context, whether it's per 90, per 100 passes, 100 touches, whatever. So I, from what I've seen about packing, it maybe doesn't include that, but it's very simple to look at how many passes a player has made in a game, how many players they have advanced the ball past, how many players they've packed, so to speak, and then work it out from there.
But by the way, the more we're saying the word packed and packing, I'm thinking of this as like you just got packed, mate. Like if the ball passes you in a game, or like, oh, I got packed so many times this game. It's such a weird phrase to bring up.
But it's not a term that's actually been, I've never heard it
in all of my days of talking about football with people.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting sort of tactic and metric, or whatever you want to call it. But I think it has its flaws, I think, compared to some of the more advanced metrics which we've spoken about before, and again we'll come on to. So I think maybe that's why it hasn't taken off quite as much. But it's going back a few years ago now to when it was first sort of created, if you like. It was invented by two Bayer Leverkusen teammates, actually, Stefan Reinartz and Jens Hegeler. Again, I'm trying my best with these names.
And also, just before you go any further, have you got any qualms with their methods? Because you, as we've learned in the past, you may get contacted by someone who's done this study or invented this metric. They may well come for you if you find any, if you have any sort of quibbles.
Yeah, well, they'd be most welcome to. I mean, I've already sort of mentioned how that context needs to be added in terms of that packing.
You're in trouble, mate. Over. Yeah.
But I mean, they'd be most welcome to come on the Football Fanalytics podcast. But they, I don't know whether they still are, but they basically set up a company called Impact. And it's based in Cologne, and it does provide, well, I don't know whether they still are active, but providing data to clubs. And I know that they've worked with Domenico Tedesco, now manager of RB Leipzig, but at the time manager of Schalke when they were working with him.
Nice.
Also worked with Thomas Tuchel, I believe, at PSG, when he was at PSG, obviously. Yeah. Now at Chelsea. So they look at it in terms of their analysis for a game of their own players and the opposition players as well.
Yeah.
It's an interesting sort of topic to come on to. They essentially count up the number of opponents that have been, I guess, outplayed by the team, and that's what's called the packing rate. And as you would imagine, they have got data to show that the more players that you obviously pack, if we're going to continue that, the higher likelihood of obviously winning the game is, because if you are just maybe getting into a position where you're advancing the ball then crossing it in from wide, you've not really advanced the ball past anyone, you've not taken anyone out of the game there, you've still got a high likelihood of it just being a pretty much a matchup between just 10 of, you know, your players and 10 opponents as well. So it's an interesting one. As I say, created or invented from two Bayer Leverkusen former players now, and they've created this this company called Impact, which I think is really interesting. I think there's other metrics that you could simply look at it from. As I say, there's companies which look now at line breaking passes and how many players make those, or progressive passes, things like that. It taps into that same sort of thing, but as a concept and as a metric. Packing is something which I don't think, as you say, that many people know about.
No, I haven't heard it. And also, it's the same sort of thing with line-breaking passes and progressive passes, like you just say. That's terminology that is used within knowledgeable football circles. But if you were down the pub, as we've said several times, and you know, sort of said how many line-breaking passes someone would make, there are a few people who still sort of say to you, well, what does that mean? Kind of thing. So actually, this packing is an interesting way of visualizing it, almost, because if you're picturing those lines that you're referring to break in, you're referring to how many players you're moving through with a pass or a dribble. So I think it's a nice visual way of sort of looking at it, you know?
I do. That's where I think that my caveat to this, or my skepticism that we spoke about previously, is that I don't think it distinguishes between those line-breaking passes and maybe that pass which I mentioned, which maybe goes out to the fullback and takes players out. I think a line-breaking pass into the centre of a pitch is far more of a skill, far more adding far more value, I think, than maybe it whipping it round to the fullback. Not to say that that isn't also valuable as well, but I think it maybe lacks that context to say how those players were packed, almost how you've advanced the ball, whether it's maybe going out wide and you've gone round the opposition rather than through the opposition. I think it's a key difference there. So it can lack a bit of context, but overall it maybe is quite useful.
So speaking of context then, here's a question that I have. So I'm sort of assuming that, say, I've played a beautiful pass that's taken out four people or something, and it's received by a winger or whoever I've passed to. That's I've packed four people there. Mm-hmm. What happens if a goalkeeper takes a goal kick and they just absolutely belt it to the target man up top? And technically, it's gone over the strikers, it's gone over the midfield, it might have gone over a defender or two. Mm-hmm. And the striker gets their head on it but loses possession. It's obviously not done anything in that regard. I've just lumped a long ball, hopefully upfield, hoping for the best. But technically on paper, because it had made contact with a striker and I've technically packed, I don't know, mm-hmm. eight or nine people there. Mm. What's the deal with that? Because that's obviously, a goalkeeper surely would come out on top a lot of the time as the person who's packed the most players, you know. So how do we distinguish between that and what is an actual useful pass, if you see what I'm saying?
No, I agree. I think that's maybe where, and people might, you know, disagree with this, or people might enlighten me a little bit more, but I think this is where more advanced metrics like expected threat, which we spoke about in episode 19, or possession value, again, which we spoke about in episode 6, they look more at the likelihood of scoring, essentially, when a player has the ball.
Yeah.
And then whatever action they do, whether it is a pass or a dribble, by the time they've almost finished that action, made the pass to, let's say, the winger, what is then the likelihood of scoring from that location? So you can obviously then look at it from where the ball is, not just the fact that they've passed the ball from X to Y.
I see.
So I think with the goalkeeper example, they're starting from a position where it's not very valuable. Where they are in their own box, they're not going to score in any time, you know, anytime soon from their own area. And they're maybe advancing the ball. They might have packed five players, let's say, but they've advanced it to the fullback, who's maybe still on the halfway line. Mm. Now they've packed five players, but what happens if then the fullback gets it and then passes into the between the lines just outside the penalty area, and they've maybe packed three players? The value that that fullback has added is actually more than the goalkeeper,
yes,
because they've advanced the ball into a dangerous area, but in theory their packing score, packing rate, is only three compared to the goalkeeper's five.
Yes.
So the context there is that, well, the value actually added is higher in the fullback. So we need to obviously take into account the location of the ball, the location of the player who receives that pass, to then say, okay, well, actually that is more valuable. So this is where these more advanced metrics, as I mentioned, possession value, expected threat, can add that bit more context, if that makes sense.
Which you've done well, actually, in terms of expected plugs per episode.
Exactly.
You've done pretty well there. But I remember when we looked at expected threat and possession value, they are some of the metrics that have stood with me for a lot of the episodes that we've sort of done. So it's definitely worth listeners going back and looking at those, because that really makes you look at, you know, the different value players are adding, really. And that's actually, when I'm watching a football game now from an amateur point of view, mm-hmm. I still find that really interesting to think, well, how much has that pass actually done, or, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think it's a two-way street. I think let's pause for thought and give some examples of how that could work.
Mm. I do love it when we pause for thought, because I need to get my brain around new metrics. So, yes, let's do that.
Okay, so yeah, true to form, it's always good for us to talk about a concept. And sometimes we think about it quite abstract, mm-hmm. you know, because it is tricky to talk about these things, whether it's a data perspective or tactic. So it's always good to give an example where possible. So is there anything, any players or any examples that you can think of, Ryan, that would show this in effect in terms of packing?
It's funny, because the actual example I was thinking of when I asked you about the goalkeepers, a goal kick is one thing. But I think there was an example that I tweeted about, actually. It was Alisson against Man United the other day. And he played this utterly ridiculous pass out of his hands that I think it found Mane in a dangerous situation. It wasn't just a lumping it upfield and hoping someone would run onto it. It was one of those that they do where they sort of throw the ball high and then sort of side
volley it.
Yeah, side volley it down almost. And it cut through about, I don't know, 7 or 8 Man United players and found Mane in a really dangerous position on the left-hand side. And it wasn't too long before the second or third goal, I don't think. I was just like, oh, you're a joke. Like, how can you play passes like that? But that's an example of a goalkeeper not just lumping at a field,
yeah,
actually adding value to the amount of players they've packed as well.
Yeah, correct.
I mean, for me, the one, again, another Liverpool player, the one that stands out for all of this is just Thiago, isn't it? Because he just completely, every time he has the ball, you can't see the passes that he sees. And I think Jurgen Klopp mentioned that, didn't he, the other day? But he'll just find a way to carve through 3 or 4 players every single time. And actually, he also looks after possession as well. I was noticing when I was watching the other day. He looks after possession when he needs to and offloads a really simple pass.
Yeah.
But then, just on the swivel, will just, you know, play a carving ball through some players and just make so much... that whipped round.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just makes so much ground and you know, gets into positions that... You just you've no right to be in. It's very impressive.
Yeah, well, he's a deep line playmaker, and the way that his body shape, it looks as though he's going to maybe play it out to the fullback, and then it suddenly goes in between the lines, and it's something I want to come on to. In who's good at actually being in between the lines to receive the ball as well.
Who do you think of, though?
No, I think of Thiago as well. I think the one of the main examples or high profile examples with Thiago was that Champions League final game for Bayern Munich.
Yeah,
a couple of years ago now, where I think it was to Joshua Kimmich. Well, that was the goal. It was the 1-0,
yeah,
1-0 win. That he played it from deep. He was collecting it pretty much in his own third, and it just took out so many players. And he had that exact one that just then advanced it. And that, I think we might have even spoken about that same example before. That is a prime example of more the possession value thing.
Yeah.
Yes, he's packed loads of players there as well, but he's actually added so much value. He won't get the assists. He won't even get the pre-assists.
No,
but he has added so much value to the team there in his action. So I think Thiago is one of the main ones. But as I say, I think it's interesting to think of the players who actually do receive it. Almost, yeah, who is the player who is the packing receiver? Obviously, adding value in that regard as well. Are there more players who show for the ball to be able to, you know, for that pass to actually occur? So who is, you know, playing between the lines, for example? That's always really good ones as well. Yes, maybe fullbacks are more likely to be those people because they're going to stay wide and they've got some space. But maybe in more central areas, who are those players who maybe drop off the last line, receive the ball between the lines, and then obviously build from there? They are valuable players.
I feel like we need a better term than packing receiver. Maybe they are the players who are unpacking. Because the player who's making the pass is packing, and the player who's looking to show is unpacking the team.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, nodding like I've made something really insightful there.
Okay.
But yes, I know what you mean. You can't make those ridiculous passes unless there is someone looking to make that move or showing for the ball, etc. And these are the kind of players that you hear all the time, don't you, when commentators are sort of saying the things you don't see, you know, and it's very hard to assign value, I would imagine, to players like, it's like the Mason Mount example, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who everyone always says does really unbelievable work, and for the average sort of football fan eye, it's very difficult to quantify, and you can't see what players like him do. But Firmino as well, I think, is probably someone who's who has a touch, you know, really really good, and just knows where to be and makes it really difficult for defenders to mark them because they get themselves into these positions and are able to receive the ball. And then when they do, it causes all sorts of problems about moving the team around, doesn't it? And so exactly. I'm guessing that's what you mean by the...
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And it does, yeah, it drags the opposition centre-backs maybe out of position. It allows the wingers or the wide forwards to come in and fill that space as well. But it's something which John Muller through The Athletic actually did a really interesting piece on, that we need to give more credit to the pass receivers.
Yeah.
Because obviously, I think we spoke about this before as well, that it's a two-way street, isn't it?
Pass,
for a pass to occur, you need the person to pass and you need the person to receive. Now, typically all of the credit goes to the person who makes the pass. You know, thinking of Thiago, like, fantastic passing, but the way that any one of his teammates, whether it's Trent Alexander-Arnold or Salah, often when he plays those balls, are making those runs to be able to advance the ball. If they're just static, or you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold staying, you know, in his fullback position near his centre back, then the value that Thiago adds isn't going to be as much.
Yeah.
So it takes, you know, two to tango almost. It's all about the ball receiver as well. And players like Firmino, Mason Mount, maybe
Bernardo Silva,
I was going to say Lacazette this season as well, where he's dropping in really well. Historically, obviously, someone like Lionel Messi playing that false nine role, he's an obvious example. But those players who make themselves available for those really good passes as well, really important.
It's so true, because you'd never see on Sky Sports, would you, 25 passes received. Do you know what I mean? As a statistic, that'd never be a thing, would it? Is there a way, in terms of the, obviously the analytics community love a visualisation of things. Am I right in thinking that I've seen on the 23 content toolbox before?
I don't know if I've told you, Ryan, but we are in association with 23.
I mentioned it in a while, actually. We should probably remind people of that. But is there? Am I right in thinking I've seen something that sort of says average positions where players receive a ball or something, just to sort of show what position they're getting into?
Yeah, no, exactly. And even progressive passes received as well. So I think then it goes one further, doesn't it? When coming back to the, you know, the packing example of where you've actually received it, where it's gone forward, because anyone can receive a square pass, but it's the location of those passes that have been progressive. So it shows that you're maybe more likely to have then made a run rather than just getting it, you know, back off someone.
Yeah.
So I think that it's always the context, which packing does to a certain extent, of the value of those passes either made or received. So I think that, you know, to sort of summarize this episode, it does fall into the same category as talking about passing, from the expected threat angle, the possession value angle, how much, not just how much are you passing and how much is, what is your pass completion rate, but how much are you actually contributing to the likelihood that your team is going to score a goal.
Yeah.
And that is obviously the name of the game. And I'll leave you with this, Ryan. This is a quote actually from someone called Christoph Biermann, who actually wrote a really interesting book called Football Hackers, The Science and Art of a Data Revolution, which is, a fantastic title as well. And the quote about packing is this: spending time getting to grips with packing has changed my view of football games. The metric has sharpened the focus on killer passes and suicidal loss of possession. I pay more attention to passing recipients and less to the passer. And I think that summarized it really well.
Yeah.
He said, don't watch the ball, watch the intelligence of the player seeking the ball.
Oh.
So he said it better than us spending 10 minutes on it in three sentences.
Mason Mount should have that as his Twitter handle. Don't watch the ball, watch the intelligence of the player seeking the ball.
There you go.
If you're listening, Mason, take that and stick it on there. That's really good. I like that a lot.
What a way to sign off.
Mark, the timing of this episode and the subject of packing has actually worked really well with a new Twitter account that I discovered that has quickly become my favourite Twitter account. The handle is @sexypassers, so immediately I was obviously drawn to it straight away. And it's called No Context Sexy Passers, and it literally does what it says on the tin. It every day seems to post from the archives a new pass that is just from, I don't know, the 2000s, even recently. And they're actually all really applicable to the subject of packing, because there's one that came out, I think, yesterday, and it was from the Champions League final, and it was Kaká carving through a pass of a whole Liverpool team, Jamie Carragher flat on his back, to play through the striker, and they scored. I'm sure you remember that one well.
Yeah.
And every day there's a better example. There was one from Xabi Alonso where he sort of hit a pass on the swivel that I'd never seen before through to Luis Garcia.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, taking out many, many players. But also, sort of, a lot of them have got good possession value as well, because they're often assists that are sort of ridiculous. So, for anyone who doesn't follow @sexypassers, shout out to them. It's absolutely fantastic. Have you seen it? Have you seen a couple of the examples?
I've seen those examples. And this is something actually we can get the listeners to message in on. You know, what are your best examples of these players who are doing more packing, whether it is just looking at that, that Twitter handle. But I mean, another example I can think of, maybe Paul Scholes. He's someone who just gets it, you know, used to get it out of his feet and just get it forward nice and early.
Yeah.
Plenty of examples there. But yeah, send in, you know, examples of either a pass which takes out loads of players, whether it is from that Twitter account, or just examples of players who come to mind when you think who takes the team out in terms of the opponents more so than others and who maybe plays more of a safer pass.
Yeah, and then next episode we'll unpack them.
Oh my God. We all have our roles, don't we? We all have our roles in this this podcast.
You know, there's like a thing that comes up and it says, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it. And then I almost didn't because it was that bad. But come on, give me something.
I think it's about time we wrapped up, Ryan. Don't you?
Yeah, we packed it in.
Pack it in now. I mean, yeah, I'm sorry, listeners. That's all I can do is apologise. But if you want to complain about Ryan, you know where to find us. Yeah. We are fanalytics.pod@gmail.com.
Packing his bags.
Email us. He's packing his bags. I mean, I am. or, of course, we're on Twitter and Instagram @fanalyticspod. I can guarantee you that Ryan is thinking of another example of trying to fit the word packing in. So before he does, I will sign off. Enjoy the rest of your week, everybody.
Oh, I haven't got anything.
And we will see you next time.
No, it's gone.
Sports Social Podcast Network.